Welcome to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win, a monthly podcast by the U.S. Human Rights Network, addressing human rights issues in the United States. I'm your host, Sacagawea Hall. In this episode of our podcast, we'll take a look at the recent hunger strike by solitary confinement inmates in Georgia, a renewed call to end the 287G program, which grants local police and sheriffs the power to act as immigration officials, and the recent report documenting 120 African Americans killed by the police, with a look at the specific case in Georgia of Ariston Waiters. After one of the largest prisoner work strikes in U.S. history took place in December 2010, men perceived to be leaders of the strike were rounded up and placed into solitary confinement in Georgia's Jackson State Prison, where Troy Davis was executed. 18 months later, a hunger strike took place, with prisoners protesting inhumane conditions, including prolonged solitary confinement. 10 confirmed prisoners, some of whom were involved in the 2010 work strike, began refusing food in June 2012. Their demands included access to proper hygiene, medical treatment of injuries, restoration of family visitation and communication rights, and access to personal property. Delma Jackson, the wife of one of the hunger strikers, Miguel Jackson, said the Department of Corrections is violating its own standard operating procedures.
My husband, he's been held in maximum security prison under 24-hour lockdown. He's supposed to have an hour a day, but he has not been outside since March of this year.
Jackson said her husband was severely beaten by prison guards following the 2010 prison work strike and has been in solitary confinement since. He also has not been given proper medical treatment in the 18 months of isolation. Additionally, Jackson says other rights are being denied, including access to their commissary and the 30-day status review every inmate in punitive isolation is supposed to receive. Bernice Watley O'Kelly, mother of Sean Watley, says her visitation and all communication have been cut off for 8 months. Like Miguel Jackson, Sean Watley was also suspected of leading the 2010 work strike and severely beaten. Watley has been in solitary confinement for over a year. In an interview during the hunger strike, Watley O'Kelly expressed doubts that any officials would intervene, although family members and supporters appealed to the Department of Correction Commissioner Brian Owens and Governor Nathan Deal.
They're not going to step in. They're not going to help. It's going to take the families of the inmates and the loved ones that has got the nerve to step out.
She was right. Even with community pressure, no official stepped up to intervene in the hunger strike. In fact, the response was the opposite. Shortly after a rally at the Department of Corrections headquarters, Delma Jackson's visitation rights were terminated. Jackson believes this was in retaliation for persistent advocacy for her husband and other prisoners. She questioned the motive behind the decision.
You don't want me to visit with my husband. Why? Why don't you want me to visit with my husband? What are you trying to hide? What is it that you don't want me to know? What is it that you don't want the pet taxpayers to know?
After 36 days of refusing food, most of the men ended their hunger strike. Of the 10 that were known to be on strike, July 26th marked their 45th day. Kelvin Stevenson and Miguel Jackson. Families sharing reports from the men's attorney say that the hunger strike continued until its 50th day on Monday, July 30th. Hugh Esco, who works with the Georgia Green Party and has been involved in prisoner solidarity work since the 2010 strike, says the conditions the prisoners face violate human rights standards, particularly the long periods of isolation.
In the international community, they talk about 15 days of solitary confinement bordering on torture. And if 15 days is torture, what is 18 months? What is 10 years? One of these hunger strikers apparently has been locked down for 10 years now.
Since the hunger strike's end, Esco and others have continued to show solidarity with the prisoners, and family members continue to fight for their loved ones' humanity.
This July, organizations across the U.S. renewed their call to end the 287G program. 287G is a federal law that grants local police and sheriffs the power to act as immigration officials on behalf of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, also known as ICE. ICE is a part of the Department of Homeland Security, and it claims the law is meant for dangerous criminals or terrorists, but groups opposed to the program say it harms local communities. Azadeh Shashahani, the National Security and Immigrants' Rights Project Director for the American Civil Liberties Union Foundation of Georgia, joins us to talk about their call to end 287G in Georgia. Azadeh, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So can you start off by sharing with us what the impact of 287G has been in Georgia?
287G has really had a very negative impact on communities in Georgia. There are four counties right now that have the program in Cobb, Gwinnett, Hall, and Whitfield, and these are all communities with very large and significant immigrant populations. For example, the city of Dalton in Whitfield County is, by some accounts, 40% Latino, and a large worker population who is active in the carpet industry. And 287G has really made the community afraid to go about living their daily lives, and it's led to separation of families. And it's also, I should say, it hasn't only impacted the undocumented immigrant community, it's also impacted communities of color because of the atmosphere of racial profiling and abusive policing practices in the counties that we have documented, actually, via two reports focused on Cobb and Gwinnett specifically, where we spoke to community members about their experience as a result of 287G. And what we heard was that community members are feeling isolated. They are living in a state of terror. And, you know, even if they're a victim of a crime, they're afraid to go to the police or a figure of authority because the police is so entangled in enforcement of immigration laws.
So what does that end up looking like? How does that play out? Like, how often are we seeing law enforcement in Georgia playing that role?
Well, pretty much any time that somebody is pulled over in Cobb for any driving infraction, they could be then taken to the jail, you know, especially if they're undocumented and don't have a driver's license. For that offense, they're arrested and taken to the jail. And at that point, 287G kicks in. And so there are certain sheriff deputies in Cobb County, Gwinnett, Whitfield, and Hall that are empowered to then start deportation proceedings against immigrants after inquiring about their immigration status at the jail. And so that then triggers the whole process where immigrants are then turned over to the custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement and are taken to detention facilities as far as the Stewart Detention Facility in Lumpkin or the Irving County Detention Center in Ocala, Georgia.
So have we seen an increase in these types of detentions with the 287G program, or since the start of the 287G program?
Yes, definitely. I mean, thousands of people have been arrested and deported as a result of 287G in Cobb, Gwinnett, and other counties. And one thing, too, that you know, we should keep in mind, I just mentioned the detention centers. Three out of the four immigration detention centers in Georgia are operated by corporations. So there is definitely a profit motive behind the increased detention and deportation of immigrants, and the corporations are, in fact, behind the passage of the anti-immigrant measures that lead to increased deportation of immigrant communities.
Okay. Can you tell us about the complaint pending with the Department of Justice, Civil Rights Division, and the Department of Homeland Security Office of the Civil Rights and Civil Liberties?
Mm-hmm. Right. So pursuant to our reports, we filed a complaint with both institutions asking them to initiate investigations into racial profiling in Cobb and Gwinnett. And we also demanded that 287G be immediately terminated. at those two counties. I should mention that there are only about 60 localities in the entire country that have 287G, and most of them happen to be in the South. And the reason that many police around the country do not want 287G is because they have realized that, you know, enforcing immigration laws is not their job. They, you know, the police do want to have a good relationship with the community, and they understand that, you know, having a safe community for all of us means that immigrants should be able to trust the police, and that's just not possible in a county with 287G.
Okay. Before we wrap up, can you talk a little bit about the recent Supreme Court's ruling on Arizona's Senate Bill 1070? What are the national implications of the ruling, and how will it impact Georgia? How does it impact Georgia?
Well, the Supreme Court did convey a very strong rebuke to the state of Arizona and states like Arizona that have made it their business to implement anti-immigrant measures. You know, the issue before the court was whether the states have the authority to enact anti-immigrant measures that basically get into the regulation of immigration, and the Supreme Court said no. So three out of the four provisions before the Supreme Court were struck down. There was a show-me-your-papers provision, which Georgia also has a similar measure to, and the Supreme Court, unfortunately, did not block that quite yet. And however, the Supreme Court did not close the door to future litigation, and so we are hopeful that you know, that provision will also be found to be unconstitutional in the future and will not be implemented. Right now, in Georgia, the Show Me Your Papers provision, as well as another provision that criminalizes the act of giving a right to an undocumented person or housing an undocumented person, is blocked as a result of a lawsuit brought by the ACLU of Georgia and other organizations. And so the state of Georgia appealed that decision by the district court to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And the 11th Circuit Court had postponed a decision till after the Supreme Court decision on Arizona, and so right now we are awaiting a decision from them, and we do hope that they affirm the decision of the Supreme Court of the District Court in Georgia, and do continue to block the two provisions of the Georgia law.
Okay, and appeals are also being made to the Obama administration. No, I read there was a letter July 16th. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So this was a national letter signed by more than 230 organizations for the Obama administration to go ahead and immediately terminate 287G in all across the country, but in particular in the copycat states. And by that, I mean states that have passed Arizona copycat measures, and there are five, including Georgia, because the Department of Homeland Security, the day after the Supreme Court decision, said that they're going to terminate some aspects of 287G in Arizona, and so the community really felt that that decision really needs to be expanded, both in Arizona and also in the various states. And also, there was a call on the administration to at least suspend the so-called Secure Communities Program, which, you know, it definitely does not make our communities safer, rather less safe. And it's also similar to 287G in that it entangles the local police in the enforcement of immigration laws. And the plan is for the administration to have that program in place in all jails by 2013, regardless of whether a particular state wants that or not. So there are several states in the country, such as New York, Illinois, and Massachusetts, as well as Washington, D.C., that have made it very clear to the administration that they do not want anything to do with this program, but the administration, unfortunately, is forcing secure communities down their throat. So So there's, you know, there's local struggles, and we hope that the federal government will realize that, you know, having the type of enforcement programs in place where the local police becomes entangled with enforcement of immigration laws is really it's problematic the same way as Arizona copycat laws are.
Okay. And so if is there any way for people to be to get involved or find out more information?
Definitely. I mean, I think people really should get involved locally where they are. You know, there is a struggle everywhere that people live. So if you're in Georgia, you know, there are multiple ways to get involved. You can, of course, find out about the work of the ACLU of Georgia. You can go to our website, www.acluga.org. We also have a coalition called Georgia Detention Watch that's focused on detention and enforcement issues, and the website is www.gadetentionwatch.com. And there's also the Georgia Immigrant and Refugee Rights Coalition that works on many issues pertaining to immigrant rights communities in our state.
Okay, great. Anzadeh, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
In Georgia this past June, a grand jury failed to indict Officer Luther Lewis for the shooting of 19-year-old Ariston Waiters. Lewis argues he was acting in self-defense and says Waiters tried to take his gun. Frieda Waiters, Ariston's mother, tells a different story.
Where he was walking, he walked up on my son and told my son, like I said, flat on the ground, and he placed his knee in my son's back and held my son down and shot him in the back. And the part about him shooting him in the back and he had to do it, Luther Lewis was over 200 or more pounds. My son was only 164 pounds. And if you think about it and do it do the reacting, there's no way my son could have struggled with someone of that, with that many pounds on him. There's no way he could have struggled and even reached for the gun.
Although the grand jury did not indict Lewis, there is a federal investigation into the shooting. The Waiters family continues to seek justice and demands that the federal government meet with them. They want Officer Lewis to be held accountable and the federal government to recognize that Ariston's civil rights were violated. Ariston Waiters is one of the many African Americans to die at the hands of the police. A recent report by the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement documents that every 36 hours, a black person in the United States is killed, mainly by the police, but the numbers include some security guards and self-appointed law enforcers. The report documents 120 murders this year alone. Activist member of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, Jared Ball, says the report is important because it documents a systemic problem.
That these are not isolated incidents, that these are not, you know, to be seen as disconnected, random occurrences, but part of an ongoing assault on African America.
Ball says the disregard for black life and the abuse of the black community needs to be put in the context of human rights violations and cannot be addressed by the civil rights laws of the United States alone.
The assaults against black women and men in the United States is being carried out by people who are sanctioned by the laws of this country to commit this kind of abuse. The point being then that if they are sanctioned by the legal structure of this society then to commit this kind of systemic abuse against black women and men in the United States, then the laws governing the United States are either insufficient or insufficiently applied in protecting the human rights of these black women and men. And the purpose of the report is to, or one of the purposes is to try to highlight this as a human rights issue and an ongoing human rights crisis.
Along with the report, the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement has launched a No More Trayvon Martins campaign to organize and seek community-driven solutions, while also holding the United States government accountable to international law and human rights standards. For more information, Visit the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement website at www.mxgm.org. The U.S. Human Rights Network is dedicated to building a people-centered human rights movement in the United States. For more information about the network and how to become a member, visit www.ushrnetwork.org. We also want to hear your feedback. Get in touch with us by emailing info@ushrnetwork.org. Thanks for listening to Dare to Struggle, Dare to Win. Join us next month.